Yo, 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 Thought Warriors. What is up? Higher Learning is on. It is I, Van Lathan Jr.
And it's me, Rachel Lynn Lindsay.
Rachel?
I didn't think I would get emotional. I just, I know people, first off, I just want to say thank you for people who reached out. I'm like still trying to reply to people. You just never know how great your circle is until you see all the people that reach out and love you. Obviously, it's a difficult time if you've read the headlines, but and you're probably wondering why I would even work. But to be honest with you, I need to distract myself from myself. And the best way to do that is to do something that I love, and I love Higher Learning. And so I am going to try my best to get through this podcast, but I'm not going to talk about it. I will eventually, but now is not the time. Just trying to take it day by day.
And this is all in reaction, obviously, to Texas losing in the college football playoff.
This is why I wanted to come to Higher Learning.
I knew that it would affect you. I knew that because I was watching it. Because look, when you're watching your friend's team and they've been talking shit, there's always this back and forth that you're doing. Because I want you to be happy, but then I want you to be wrong at the same time. So I'm torn. So I was watching and I was like, it would be so great if Rach gets to go to the national championship game and see your team. But at the same time, this motherfucker been talking too much shit.
Okay. First, I guess I am going to talk about it now. You can't tell me that there wasn't a second of you that thought, for a second you thought, Texas is going to win this whole thing.
Yeah,
that last drive. I honestly wish we would have just lost in with 2 minutes left. The way that got our hopes up, I thought the play calling was absolutely horrendous. At the end, yes.
You come in directly for Sark?
Go back and look at the last four plays. It was like the same thing over and over again. I don't understand what we were doing. We were focused on one side of the field. We had even adjusted to that side. We kept throwing in the corner to the same wide receiver. I just did not understand what was happening. And it was like we kept getting break after break after break. And I was like, okay, we got this. Sorry for the player that got injured, but that we got this. This stopped the clock. This added time to the clock. Got 1 second left on the clock. And we just couldn't. We didn't deserve it. If we couldn't make it after all of that, we didn't deserve it. And is that a Michigan hat?
No, it's not a Michigan hat. Not a Michigan hat at all. I'm not wearing a Michigan hat. You know what? We have to bring Donnie in. By the way, I just want to say before we move on, I had to segue out. But before we move on, I love you. I respect you. You're a member of my family, and whatever you need, and in any way, me and everyone who loves you can be supportive. We're going to be right there. So just wanted to make sure everybody knows that. And for those who came clamoring for something, it's going to happen on her time, not on yours. Now, this gets me back to Donnie, because Donnie is over here acting like the cock of the walk because Michigan beat Alabama. Like Donnie, well, look, now he's gonna pop in.
Go blue. No, I was saying it feels good because I really needed it after what happened with the Lions versus Rachel's team, the Cowboys. We really got fucked in that game. So, like, I needed something to boost my spirits after that. That sucks.
Well, Donnie, are you doing a Michael Jackson situation here? What's up with the one glove?
It's chilly, and my hand doesn't work on the laptop with the glove. So, that's why.
Listen, I could have taken the L from the Cowboys if it meant my Longhorns, because I go to the championship game every year because I work with the foundation. I had burnt orange attire purchase. My outfits were already planned. The fact that now I got to go and watch two teams that I could care less about, Michigan and Washington. I could care less, but I will say that Washington quarterback is phenomenal.
He'd be dropping
how did he
dimes.
Not win the Heisman? I'm sorry. I know you're LSU, but I do not understand how he didn't win the Heisman.
I'll tell you guys, because a lot of people are asking this question, and it's a fair question when you look at the way he played in the semifinal. Just over the course of the year, he just had a couple of down games. He had a couple of games where statistically he wasn't that great. He hit a lull over the course of the year. And once Jaden got up, Michael Penix Jr. is a fantastic quarterback. Once Jaden got to where he was rolling, we're talking about historic numbers. Jaden rushed for 1,200 yards and like 12 touchdowns, in addition to throwing for like 4,000 yards. He just overwhelmed people with the numbers. But it was, for being objective, watching Michael Penix in that big game put the ball in those spaces, make those type of pressure throws, it was something to behold. I'm not going to lie. I still feel like, obviously, you know, I'm a homer. Jaden deserved it because he just statistically was so overwhelming. But, and Michael Penix wasn't as overwhelming. Jaden had way better numbers, but that nigga is the man. Lefty ass dropping it in. But you know something else though? Texas's secondary sucks. I was telling people, Texas secondary sucks. And because of that, Washington was going to have a chance. Everyone was talking about Michigan, Bama, and here's the reality. The SEC was down this year. Bama beat Georgia. Great. That same Bama team had been up and down throughout the whole season, needed a Hail Mary to beat Auburn. I know it's a rivalry game. Georgia, you can make an argument that they hadn't really beaten anybody the whole year. They got past Ole Miss. They fucked over Ole Miss. They beat Missouri, but these teams didn't have these incredibly crushing schedules that they had to dominate and these amazing signature wins. So I don't think the SEC champion was that battle-tested by the time they got there, and Michigan pushed them the fuck around. Pushed them around, yeah. SEC, the SEC team. So it was a weird year, and I think that the two best teams, the two most complete teams, made the final. So I can't wait to see what happens on Monday.
I just don't feel that. I'm so emotionally invested. And obviously, I really needed Texas to win.
Yeah.
I really needed that to happen.
Yeah, I
but
was thinking
I'll
was,
be at the game.
Right? You'll be there. I was like, damn. All right, you know, all right, let's.
It's so true.
I was like, damn, man.
This is what we got to laugh through our pain, man. This right, is what right. we do. This is what we do.
All right, big deal of the day. They got her. Harvard President Claudine Gray has resigned.
I'm unstable, guys.
You thought it was about you.
This episode is brought to you by Empower. You got money questions like, can I retire early? What are my best savings options? Can I afford to pay for my kids' education? Luckily, Empower has all the answers. With Empower's real-time dashboard and real live conversations, you get clarity on your real life financial goals. So join 18 million Americans and Empower What's Next. Start today at empower.com. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. Sponsored by Empower, not an endorsement or a statement of satisfaction by a client. This episode is brought to you by cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on cars.com.
Claudine Gay, the president of Harvard University, has resigned from her position. 6 months she got to be the president. Now, if you don't know the backstory here, universities, a lot of higher education has come under fire for the way that they've handled protests on campuses all over America, but particularly in the Ivy League. We saw the presidents of MIT, of Penn, I think it was, and of Harvard have to testify before Congress about the rising anti-Semitism on campus and their response to it. They bricked when they went up there.
They bricked. Yeah.
While I think that a lot of the issues that they were being asked to speak to were politically manufactured in a very direct way, meaning that we've talked about terms that were used and intifada and different things like that. I do think that there was a more eloquent, more direct way for them to articulate that they cared specifically about the safety of the Jewish students on their campuses. And I don't think that they don't care about them. I just don't think that they came off very well. And there's been some talk about why that was and how lawyered they were and what they were trying to accomplish. But they bricked it. After that, they were all targets. The president of Penn resigned not too far after that. Claudine Gay did not. Mm-hmm. And she received backup from a lot of the uppers there at Harvard, the alumni groups, the faculty, all of that stuff. That was until a plagiarism narrative was spun around her. And there were some very prominent people that were out to get her. Let's be honest. But in their fishing, they caught something. They caught a dozen or so, a little bit more instances of plagiarism from her academic past.
Was it that many?
I think it was like 16 or something like that. And the New York Times got on it and there was a narrative surrounding it. And she resigned. And in her resignation later, she said this: "It is with a heavy heart, but a deep love for Harvard that I write to share that I will be stepping down as president. This is not a decision I came to easily. Indeed, it has been difficult beyond words because I've looked forward to working with so many of you to advance the commitment to academic excellence that has propelled this great university across centuries. But it's become clear that it is in the best interest of Harvard for me to resign so that our community can navigate this moment of extraordinary challenge with a focus on the institution rather than any individual." She wrote an op-ed in the New York Times a day after she resigned, and the people, namely Christopher Rufo, Ackman, some of the rest of these guys, Ackman is a billionaire guy who has been on this as well. Christopher Rufo is a conservative journalist, and a fellow at the Manhattan Institute, I think, who has, railed against DEI, railed against CRT in the past, but has also been at the head of trying to get her ousted. They took a victory lap everywhere, and they are letting people know that it's not just about Claudine Gay. It is about the end of DEI, and other people are letting people know that this is about what they'll do to anyone who they feel like is coming cross at the state of Israel. So she was a big trophy for them, and they got her.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think that, one, do you think she resigned or they basically were like, you need to go, kind of forced her out? And two, do you think that it was the pressure that they were getting from donors and alums in regards to what people felt like were anti-Semitic comments by her in front of Congress? Or do you think that it's the plagiarism that put them over the top?
Okay. Interesting. So we do know at other places there have been, money has been involved. Put to you like this. I think at Penn, there was a $100 million donation that was not coming in.
Right.
And so the donors at Penn, a lot of the mega donors at Penn let it be known that if they didn't make a change in their leadership, then they would be hurting financially. With Claudine Gay, it's interesting because the brass at Harvard seemed to support her. And there was even talk that behind the scenes that President Obama himself was lobbying for them to keep her. And it was a lot trickier for them because she's Black. Because she's Black, and because she's being targeted in this very specific way, it looks and feels a way. It was a historic achievement for her to be the president of Harvard. It's a Black female president of Harvard, right? So it was a historic achievement. And for them to undo that, it seemed to be a lot trickier than it would be in any other school. So there are a lot of things that were at play here. I guess for me, I'm looking at it like this. The plagiarism thing became something not that was the reason that to me that she resigned. It became something that made the story unignorable, right? So it and this is what I'll tell you. first of all, let's look at the plagiarism here. The plagiarism that they're talking about is Claudine Gay in her academic past. We're going back to the 90s here. Okay. In her academic past, not properly citing things that she used. So she'd change a word around, she'd do something, and she wouldn't cite it in the correct way. The citations were wrong. The out and out plagiarism that some of you guys are thinking about, where, hey, Jimmy wrote this paper.
Right.
And then I put my name on it and say that I wrote it, is not what they're talking about. They're talking about plagiarism from an academic definition, and it's much more about how things are being cited and how she's using the words and specifying different thoughts than anything else. And she was apparently, she had too many instances of where she didn't do that correctly. Now, I should also say that she's not the only person and the only academic that's faced this scrutiny. Neil Gorsuch, when he was up for the Supreme Court, they found out instances where he had done it. Alan Dershowitz, other people. If you go watch Rising, you'll see that Brianna and Robbie have a very specific debate about why those guys didn't face any consequences. But, you know, it is what it is. And the standard here that they're using for her is not a novel standard. I mean, this is something that academically at Harvard they would use for students as well. And it's a pretty serious infraction. But they use like AI. They use like ChatGPT. They use software to go through this and prove it. That is novel. That's new. That's something that they didn't do before. When she wrote all of these papers back in the past, they weren't just allowed. She was praised for what she wrote. And she was one of the greatest students that they had and one of the sharpest minds that they had had. So there was no red flags in the past about Claudine Gay. Her academic record and her achievements were to the highest standard. She, without impunity, she was looked at as one of the finest minds in the country. And they've destroyed that.
Right.
And so when you look at it, it's one of those things that we discuss now to where it's not clean in the way that you would want it to be on either side of it. It's not, I can't say that there are no improprieties in what they found, but at the same time, the intent here is what makes this dirty and nasty and fucky and funky and all of that stuff, you know?
But that's my beef with, I guess, Harvard, because I feel like people that were supporting Gay were lauding, giving praise to Harvard because they had her back. You know, they were like, she's not going anywhere. She's staying here, you know? And then even in this op-ed, she talks about how, you know, she could have said this. She should have said it this way. This is what she meant to say in regards to that congressional hearing. But to me, I'm really frustrated with Harvard here because I feel like they didn't have her back. You just talked about all her achievements, and it seems like everything has been reduced to publications or things, articles that she wrote in the 90s, and takes away from the fact that she was at Stanford, that she was a dean of arts and sciences at Harvard. Then she became this. She has a long storied history of basically excellence when it comes to everything that she's done. And so the fact that they couldn't stand up and say, look, Claudine has done this, 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 and this. We hired her. She was this for 5 years. She was this for this many years before. You know, we're not going to let it look like we're playing into all those people, alums, donors, haters, racists, whatever it may be. All these people that are demanding that she step down because the work speaks for itself that she's done. And I think that's, I guess, what infuriates me about this, because it's setting a precedent for Black people, for women, and for Black women who in the future may try to be the president of an Ivy League school. It's really damaging because I just don't understand why Harvard didn't have her back here. There's a reason that she picked her.
They tried to.
After the hearing, not really with this, though. I feel like this isn't enough. As you just pointed out, other people who have had similar situations and have been able to progress in their career.
So I'm not going to make any excuses for Harvard right now. I think it's an interesting situation to me, because the only people you can really blame are the people that were intentional about wanting her gone. Those are the people that you can blame for this. Harvard, as an institution, is on the front page of the New York Times with their president being accused of plagiarism. And the accusations are credible. So at a certain point, I mean, what you look at here is Claudine Gay's decision to resign and what that means. The university in and of itself, it starts to become a stretch, because they have to think about the way that their school works. They have to think about the way that their campus works. And they have to think about the standard that they're setting as being the most lauded school in the entire world. After a certain point, when you're looking at it, it's a weird situation to be in. I don't think that necessarily Harvard, I can blame them in this situation. I think they did the best they could to stand by.
Have they put out a statement?
I haven't seen anything yet.
Because here's, if I mean, they're
been,
concerned.
There have been statements in the Harvard Crimson. And we should say that the paper, different places, there have been different voices. It's been in, it's been volleyballed around within the Harvard intelligentsia as well. There are voices, some anonymous, some making themselves very public and known. Hey, we think she should go. But the Crimson, the paper, other people in the faculty, other people have said, hey, we wanted her to stay.
It just seems like the good outweighs the bad here. And the way that you explain plagiarism as in the academic context, it didn't stop her from progressing in her career. Like, she obviously is super smart, super well-researched, like every bit deserving to have been the president, the first Black woman president of Harvard. And it makes it seem like this was so big that we have to let her go. And I guess they're concerned about their image as Harvard. I understand that. I guess I'm concerned about what this says for the people who say she never deserved to be there. She was always a DEI hire. See, she's not even qualified. She plagiarizes. And that's not the case. So I guess I just wish it would be fine. She stepped down. Let's just say that really was her decision. She wanted to take the attention away from a university that she loves and adores so much. But it also, I just hate she did it, because what seems to be louder is the other side, the haters. See, we were right. And I just wish if Harvard really, really had her back, they would say something like, this is why we decided to, you know, like she stepped, this is why we agree with her resigning. It has nothing to do with the fact that she was a DEI hire. It has nothing to do with the fact that she's not qualified. This is why.
Okay. So here's the reality here for me. So this was a vendetta that certain people had against Claudine Gay, and it had nothing to do with plagiarism. It had nothing to do with any of that. It had to do with how, because Stefanik, who is the congresswoman that was the firebrand and who garnered the most headlines from the hearing up on Capitol Hill, she said, when this was made public, said, two down, one to go. She got the president of Penn out. She got the president of Harvard out. And I guess the only thing left is the president of MIT, who also testified that day. So that tells you that this is very coordinated and very intentional. And that's the part of it to me that I think you have to discuss. There are like bad guys here. There are intentions here. There are people who want to make their point here. And that's always been the thing. And that's the toughest thing about it. Like, they lynched her. Cool. It's not like when they lynch you. Let me give you guys a little Southern lesson on lynching. Okay? My father used to talk to me about this. And he would say that there's always a reason for a hanging. We were watching a movie one time, and my dad looks at the movie, and the Ku Klux Klan just shows up on this guy's doorstep, and they go, "Nigger, come out of your house." And they are burning a cross, and it's all of them, and they got horses, and it's the whole nine. Nigga, come out of your house. They're coming out. They're going to string him up. They're going to hang him in front of his family. And my dad looked at me, and he goes, there was some of that, where they just pop up, and without anything, without even having a reason, just do that. But he said, that's not a smart lynching. He was like, that's a lynching that's just about power, where you have everyone in the situation that you need them. He was like, a smart lynching, and the way they really get you is they invent a reason. They make up a reason, or they take a reason that's real, like they get you for jaywalking and they put you in jail and they don't feed you and they just beat you to death, right? Or you are on the street drunk. You might have done a little something. It might be a misdemeanor or something, or they get you for vagrancy, right? They invent laws to invent reasons to lynch you. If you don't have a dollar in your pocket, it's vagrancy. Okay, it's vagrancy. Now you got to be in police custody. Okay, well, now that you're in police custody, what can we do to you? We cannot take you to the jail. We can drive you out to some swamp somewhere, string you up, cut your dick off, and then take pictures around everyone like you. I mean, it's just how they do it, right? So the lynching is not in the culpability or whether or not the person did something. It's whether or not the punishment fits the crime, number one. But more so, it's about the intention of it. If your intention is to lynch someone, if your intention is to rip them apart and parade them in front of everyone, if your intention is to do that, when you succeed, it's still a lynching, and it doesn't matter why. Mm-hmm. When you want to draw and quarter somebody, right? When you want to flay them, when you want to do all of these things to them, you will find a reason to do it. And when you want to protect someone, like a Gorsuch, like somebody else, when you want to protect someone for doing something, you'll find a reason to protect them. You'll find a reason that what they did wasn't that bad, or what they did was too long ago, or what they did doesn't meet the contemporary standard. And then you'll use that reason to make sure that they're valued and protected and exalted. And that's what doesn't happen for Black women. That's what didn't happen for Claudine Gay. And that's what won't happen to anyone that very directly finds themselves in the crosshairs of A, being on the wrong side of opinion surrounding this particular war, which we cannot let that not be a part of this narrative. The wrong side of opinion in this particular war, and the wrong side of a wealthy donor class here in the United States that has a lot of sway with these particular universities. And that's just a reality, right? That's just a reality. Now, if you believe that Claudine Gay is an anti-Semite, if you believe that the president of MIT or the president of Penn, if you believe that they're all anti-Semites, I get it. I would love to have a conversation with anyone so that we can go back and forth over the definition of intifada, why I don't think the intifada means genocide, why I don't think any of that stuff, right? But if you think these people are really anti-Semites, then you'd have to get them removed from their posts. I understand that. The question is whether or not we are careening towards the reality of anyone who has a cross opinion about the way Israel is prosecuting their war being labeled an anti-Semite and being able to have everything taken away from them. And that's not even Claudine Gay, but that's anyone that might fit into that bucket, anyone that might be thrown into that bag, and what that really means. Because like this right here begins with that, it ends with that, and then they spike the football in public. Chris Rufo spikes the football in public. One guy I heard with it, and when he said after this, he said there are two lessons to take this. First lesson is don't mess with the Jews. That's the first lesson. And I'm like, to all my Jewish friends out there, I don't mean this in a, because I have the most beautiful, amazing Jewish friends and Jewish people in my life. I'm like, how does that make you feel when he says that? When that gets said in this particular situation where there's so much gray, you know what I mean? There's so much gray here. So I don't know. The way I looked at it is it's the same lesson America will always give you. They can lynch you if they want to, and they can find a reason. small, big, or large, to take everything that you have from it. They, last thing I'll say, they did it to Nicole Hannah-Jones over the 1619 project.
They did.
She hadn't plagiarized anything. What she had basically done was just told them the true history of themselves, and they used that to leverage her academic future against her. So there will be a reason why they kill you. It's not a clear, I'll put you like this. Anyone who wants to, say, you know what, in this situation, they did find stuff on Claudine Gay. I get it. I think you have to use AI now to go back and this is not a novel concept for me, go back and re-qualify every single dean, president in higher education now. It's the only way for this to have any moral weight to me. It's a technology that we have now that we didn't have then. And so
they might think they're going to use it for other people?
I think they should. Mm. I think to me, the only reason why, the only way that this can have any sort of moral weight to it is if you do.
But here's the thing. If they start doing that, where does it stop, right? Okay, how many incidents do you have to have for it to be deemed you got to be removed from your position?
No,
you
know?
That it's just going to get out of control. But it's going to happen again. They used it once, they'll use it again.
This episode is brought to you by Empower. You got money questions like, can I retire early? What are my best savings options? Can I afford to pay for my kids' education? Luckily, Empower has all the answers. With Empower's real-time dashboard and real live conversations, you get clarity on your real-life financial goals. So join 18 million Americans and Empower What's Next. Start today at empower.com. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. Sponsored by Empower, not an endorsement or a statement of satisfaction by a client. This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over two decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com, tap the banner to learn more. Baseball is something else.
The cat is out of the hat. Okay? The cat is out of the goddamn hat. Cat Williams went on Club Shay Shay. Scorched earth. That little motherfucker could talk some shit, man. This is him on Ricky Smiley.
Cat Williams, don't nobody know who he is. I'm on the radio. I'm with Steve and Sad. Everybody know me. That's what he told everybody that would listen to on the set. That's the truth of the matter. He was so egregious, not now, then. He was so egregious that, and Hollywood has never heard this in 100 years. He was so egregious, I put in my contract that I won't work with Ricky Smiley again unless he's in a dress. Now, what was Ricky Smiley's next movie? Was it First Sunday? Did he wear a dress in it? You bet he did. It's in my contract.
Why would you put that in your contract, Cat?
That's where he's a believable actor.
Shit.
Him and Tyler Perry can't play a man to save their life.
Okay. Cat Williams, we gotta go through all of them real quick, Rach. Cedric the Entertainer.
Mark Curry had already helped me work on this joke because I thought it was good because I was getting a standing ovation on it. He had me go back in the lab to help me craft it to be an even more powerful joke. So this is not just a random joke. This is my very best joke, and it's my last joke, and it's my closing joke.
Okay.
1998... I'm doing this joke. It's on Comic View. Cedric comes to the Comedy Store. He watches me in the audience. He comes backstage. He tells me what a great job I did and how much he loves the joke. 2 years later, he's doing that as his last joke on the Kings of Comedy. And he's doing it verbatim. He's just changed my car into a spaceship.
Okay. One more. I mean, there was a lot more, but we can't do the whole thing. He talked about the Kings of Comedy.
A King of Comedy? Where does Cat
Williams? No, they consider that. Oh, that. Like when after Bernie left, them same three guys I'm telling you about, the Kings.
Yeah.
Right? Because DL is the greatest. Yeah. There's no DL slander gets tolerated. But they came to me. I was supposed to be the fourth king. I got the offer.
Then what happened?
But I turned it down.
Why?
Because you shit on Bernie. And I know the truth. You think I'm gonna let you shit on Bernie and then come get me? I'm the next king? Fuck you. Why? Because the whole time Bernie was here, you was acting like you was funnier than him. The reason you was supposed to go last is because it was your tour. Tell the truth. It was Steve's tour. Not it was gonna be called the Kings of Comedy. It was Steve's tour. These are the guys opening for him. Of course you gotta close if it's your tour. That's why it was such a big deal. But you couldn't do it because you can't beat the best. And until you humble yourself, you will forever be kinged by the king.
So look, he talked about a whole bunch of shit. Talked about Kevin Hart being an industry plant. His back and forth with Kevin Hart is legendary. It goes back a long way. You know, when Cat get on his shit, he give it to everyone. But for some reason, on Club Shay Shay, just the combination of Cat doing his thing and Unk just sitting there kind of bewildered, but then also pleading with Cat to take his foot off people's necks, has the internet in shambles, man. This has gone crazy. Uploaded yesterday, already at 4.5 million views.
I don't know where to start on this. I mean, what was the point for Cat Williams to go on and do this? Like, I understand if maybe you wanted to get something off your chest, specifically in regards to Cedric the Entertainer, because this isn't the first time that issue has come up. And so you felt like you needed to set the record straight. But he was just firing shots at people for no reason. Like, is he okay?
Is Cat Williams okay?
Is he okay?
I think he's fine. I think, well, number one, he's not firing shots for no reason. According to him.
Help me understand the reason.
So
I laughed.
Cat wanted this interview because he says that people that come on Club Shay Shay, I think maybe Sid, I think maybe Ricky Smiley, it's Steve Harvey.
Yes, definitely Ricky Smiley. Things, yeah.
Mm-hmm. They had said things that he said wasn't true. So they had said things about him, about comedy, that he said was all Cat. So he doesn't have anything to promote, not necessarily. He wanted to come on Club Shay Shay with Shannon Sharp, and he wanted to set the record straight on a couple of different things.
Okay. I guess, I mean, Cat Williams is somebody, yes, who just doesn't really care, I guess, the impact this is going to have. I don't anticipate any of the people that Cedric the Entertainer kind of said something in the comments, but I don't really anticipate them coming after him or responding. So I guess I'm just like, I guess he just wanted to get it off his chest, but was there like...
Of course they're going to respond. They're all going to respond.
You think so?
Yeah, they all already basically have responded.
Steve Harvey say?
Steve Harvey might not, but when I say they, I mean, these comedians are going to talk back. Michael Blackson has said something. Hart has said something like, let the anger go. My new movie's coming out. Ricky Smiley.
It's not a good, like, at the end of the day, when that's kind of Kevin Hart's response, or, you know, somebody else has a response like that, like, oh, okay, you know, good for you. You over here talking, but check out this that I'm doing. I like Cat Williams, and it just isn't a good look, in my opinion.
Okay. So it's the look. Let me tell you guys something that you guys don't know.
The look for him or the look, period?
It's the look, period, for comedians. Let me tell you guys something. As somebody who knows a lot of comedians, comedians are amongst the most miserable people.
Jeez.
Let me tell you why. It is such a competitive thing. Take the NBA, take rap, take track and field, take fucking chess, fucking Instagram twerking, modeling, whatever you think is competitive, and then ratcheted it up 30 times, and then you have stand-up comedy. Anytime you meet a stand-up comedy, most of them, I'm not going to say all of them, but most of the stand-up comedy comedians that I know, most of the stand-up comedians that I know, most of the comics I know, will tell you straight up sooner why somebody else isn't funny than why they are funny. It is so competitive. It is such a competitive game. I have never seen it like rappers complain a lot about each other when you know a lot of rappers. No group of people complains as much about one another when they're not around each other as stand-up comedians do. Nobody. No one. It's very competitive. You have to have so much confidence to do it. You have to have such a specific point of view to do it. People will steal your point of view. When someone steals a joke from a comic, I'm not a comic, I'm telling you what, I know a lot of stand-up comedians, it's like they're stealing a part of you. They're stealing your perspective. They're stealing your observation. They're stealing your life experience. They're taking all of that from you. These niggas be mad about that shit. They be super pissed off about it. Like, ridiculously pissed off. And when they feel somebody else is making it by kowtowing or playing it safe or being in the right rooms or giving the right hand job or whatever, it's deeply, deeply affecting to a lot of the comics that I know, because they feel like their truth is being overlooked for somebody else's bullshit. And it's hard for them to get past it. And so I've seen all the comics that I know that are happy and doing great. I mean, I'm so ecstatic because a lot of the guys that I know, that nigga ain't shit, man. That nigga ain't funny. I've been doing that. Man, I can't believe y'all put him on there again. I've been doing that since motherfucking 1997. I started doing that. He got all these movies, got all these shows. I'm happy for him. But at the same time, that motherfucker not funny as he's supposed to be. He not. I'm funnier than that motherfucker. And At first I was like, oh my God. And now I'm like, I get it. It's the same thing that you hear from any highly competitive field. And the only difference is Cat Williams will say all of those things that you hear in public. He'll say them out loud. I don't think all of this is true. How would I know? Like, you know what I mean? I don't know what happened with what show and what movie and all of that stuff like that. The guy doesn't come across as a liar, but you know, people have different types of perspectives on things like that. But I do know that the life of a stand-up comic is a tough one, man. It's a tough one. This is how, to me, this is how they talk about each other, from what I've heard.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. Do you think, believe the stuff that he's saying? But you kind of just answered it. Well, you just made, I mean, I appreciate, makes me appreciate comedians even more, because what they have to go through to get up on stage and make us laugh, it sounds like a lot.
Yeah, it's a tough life. So I think a lot of people that are talking about this, I mean, ask a comic who the funniest person that they know is. Like, you know, some of them will go easy. Some of them will go, okay, is Dave Chappelle, is this, is that, you know, whatever. But a lot of them will say a guy that you've never heard of. And then you'll go watch this guy, whoever they talk about, and you'll be like, this motherfucker is hilarious. Why don't he have a million fucking shows and a million fucking movies and a million fucking this? And it's they don't anoint like a bunch of them at the same time. I guess now with the internet, maybe it's a lot easier for everyone to cultivate an audience. But give an example of somebody. I once asked somebody who like their favorite comedian was. And I recognized this guy's face, but I didn't know his name. And they said Tony Roberts. And so Tony Roberts is a comedian from Detroit. And then I go watch like Tony Roberts' stand-up. He's fucking hilarious. Ridiculously high energy. Just, I was laughing my fucking ass off. And then I asked myself, I'm like, well, shit. I'm laughing so much at this guy. I can't remember even who told me this. Maybe it was Chris. I can't remember who told me that this was the funniest guy that was out there. So I'm laughing at this guy and I'm like, well, and he's had a great career. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to diss him, but I'm saying, like, why isn't this guy like the number one dude? Like what? Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes if I were somebody that were that super fucking funny, and this guy's had a great career, he sells out, he makes, I'm not saying that he's a struggling comic or anything like that, but he's a comic that I really like. I think sometimes there's a lot of animus, and that's why with my comic buddies, I'm always checking in on them. I really am.
I mean, you are opening my eyes to a whole new world. I don't have comedian friends, but I just had no idea.
A very competitive game. And if you listen to them talk, like one of my friends, another comic that I know that's really cool and like is really content is a guy named Alex Thomas. He's just like a fucking great guy, like a great guy. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them are great guys, but you get them talking about other comedians in the game, they're competitive and they will start telling you why niggas don't deserve to be where they are. Never heard anything like that from Alex. But
I've always heard comedians are the worst people to date. That's what I've always heard. And maybe this is why, because they're so miserable, as you said. I just heard they were assholes.
I mean, I wouldn't say that the guys I know that are assholes. I'm just saying it seems like a really, really, really competitive and mentally taxing gig to do. You put yourself out there all the time. You going up there doing this shit all the time. People stealing from you the whole nine. So Kat just had to get some shit off his chest. And, you know, true or not, I guess other people will too now. Who knows?
Wait, speaking of comedians. Wait, you just said something that made me think of it. Because when he's telling the Cedric the Entertainer story, he's talking about how Cedric used to see his things, like his jokes, his performances, come backstage. Does that happen a lot where bigger comedians go to smaller comedian shows and watch them and potentially get either, I don't know if they're just like seeing what the competition is or stealing jokes?
You'd have to ask comedians about that. I don't know how prevalent that is.
I just thought your comedian friends would let you know that.
I know they complain about joke stealing, but that specific structure of it, I don't know. You'd have to ask. I think we're going to have some people on to discuss this. I think we're going to have some people on to talk about this. Maybe somebody that wants to react to maybe something that Kat said, we'll have them on. But the shit that he's talking is not completely unlike other stuff that I've heard. He's just saying it in public. He's just saying it out there. You know? Some of the stuff is wild, though. It was a good watch. Good watch. Did you watch Dave Chappelle's special?
I did.
What'd you think? Why don't you want to say it? It wasn't very good. Why can't we just say it? It wasn't good.
It wasn't very good.
No. Not at all. And by the way, I wasn't offended. I wasn't offended in the least bit. I wasn't offended in the least bit. Dave Chappelle could do better than that. Like, that just wasn't that great. I think maybe I've been following Dave now. Everybody's relitigating Dave's career and acting like Dave isn't funny or Dave has one great special. Knock it off. Bullshit. He's one of the funniest motherfuckers that's ever lived. No one makes me laugh harder. But this special was a brick. And that's okay.
I didn't think it was a brick. I got to a certain point where I was like, oh, okay. Like towards the end, like the last joke, I guess I was just like expecting a little bit more, but you know, he brought it around full circle, which, you know, like I appreciate that. But I laughed. I thought that there were funny moments in it. I was maybe I just was desperate for a laugh. I don't know. I was entertained. Mm. I was entertained, you know, like but again, you know, when I watch Dave Chappelle, he says things that, you know, are offensive to other groups. And, you know, I'm always like, what's the line? I don't know.
What's the line to you?
I mean, he didn't talk about groups that, I guess, you know what? He kind of made fun of everybody in the special. He did make fun of Black people too in the special. So I guess for me, when I listen to a comedian, I just expect that there are no rules, that they're kind of just, they're going to say whatever they're prepared to say, all in under the art of comedy. So I kind of expected that coming into Dave Chappelle. I don't know how I would have felt in front of an audience hearing some of those things. Like if I had been sitting next to somebody who was disabled and they weren't laughing, I would have felt a certain way.
Yeah. So I think a couple of things about Dave. Number one, the fact that Dave is, he's made his career around pushing the line now. Now his career is about pushing the line. I actually think it's taken away from his comedy a little bit because some of his observations in the past weren't necessarily about, how about this? I think the powerful are more funny than the powerless. So I think the powerful are more funny than the powerless. I do. I think it's more funny to poke fun at the, and that's just me, to poke fun at the inconsistencies in American justice. And I think it's more fun to poke fun in inconsistencies, period, in the absurdity, period. I think you find a lot more absurdity in powerful people than you do in powerless people, because a lot of times powerless people have to be practical in order to survive. Like there's a practicality that you have to have in order to survive. There's a rule playing system that you have to do if you don't have a lot of power. Now, it's not always true. I think there are a lot of inconsistencies between men and women that I think are very funny. You guys know that, right? And I do think that there are inconsistencies within the trans community that are funny at first. I think you think about things that are funny at first, right? And let's be honest here. Like, there are things that are normal to us that when you first are confronting them, they're odd. You know, like, it's odd the first time you hear somebody say, "Oh, don't call me mister." Like, I'm they. Then you're like, what does that mean? What does they mean? You know, like, what did they, them, like, when you first learn that stuff, it's odd. It's like, oh, my God. And well, it's kind of funny.
Yes, you're not used to it. I don't know if it's funny, but it's different.
Well, no, it can be funny. Like, it can be funny. Look, give me this other example. I've told this story before, but the first time me and Charlamagne were sitting down and we're having a conversation with a friend of ours, a dear friend of ours who passed away. And it's a brilliant woman. And we were using the term female. I've told you this before. And she was like, "Don't call me a female. Like, I'm a woman." And we sitting there like, "What? You're talking about female. You're female, man. We saying females. We saying females, so we don't say bitch. So we don't say hoe. Like, we never, growing up, I never called women that stuff. So you would use other terms. When you heard your other niggas would be like, "Man, these bitches ain't on this. Man, these hoes." And we like, "Oh, man, that's a female. Don't call her. And then you get to a point to where you're like, you can't use female, and now you feel offended because you're centering yourself in that. You're not thinking about what she wants to be called. You're thinking about the favor that you're doing her by not calling her the worst fucking thing that you can. So you're sitting there being a man. That's funny that you have that type of dickhead momentum building up. But also the changing of the jargon and the reason why at first it's odd and it's funny. When you beat that to death and you refuse to accept the programming of somebody, it becomes not funny anymore.
That's true. Now,
like if you can't meet that person at a certain point and just be like, "All right, cool. It's your thing. But if it makes you feel like a more full person, if this is better for all of us as a society, if this makes us better, stronger, if you don't have to commit suicide because of this, I'm with it. I'm with it. Cool. It's not hurting me to do it. It's not hurting anything. It's only making things better." And then just the core belief that if I make you stronger and I make you better, then I make society better. If you can't have that belief about somebody, you don't care if they live or die. If you can't have the belief about someone that them being safer makes society better, then you just don't give a fuck about them, right? Mm-hmm. And after a while, I'm not offended by it. It's just really not funny anymore. Like, it's not that I'm offended. Right. It's not like I'm all, like, "Oh, I'm going to watch Chappelle when Chappelle come on. I'm not going to not watch Dave. Right, I'm not going to boycott Dave." But the fact that you're doing, it's just not funny anymore. It's not funny anymore if all Dave's a demon. It's just like, dog, we passed that.
And those are the parts that weren't funny to me.
Yeah.
They weren't funny to me. I did think that some of it was a little redundant. I felt like I had heard and maybe because I went to his special live, that I felt like I had heard the Chris Rock part before. I don't know. But again, in this special, he calls himself a lazy comedian.
I mean, to be honest with you, even with the Chris Rock thing, I expected him to have something funny to say. Look, Dave Chappelle is, let me make sure, guys, no one makes me laugh harder than Dave Chappelle, like, over the course of my life. And it's not just Killing Him Softly or the joint that he came back right after where he did the, like, we talk about the jokes that we liked. He did the one where he took his family to, like, to Disneyland. And, you know, Mickey Mouse came up to him and went, "I'm Rick James, bitch." And he was like, "It's funny. It's funny to me that he was like, "Can you please not curse me out in Disneyland when I'm in my family?" It's just all of that stuff. I think I've gotten to it. I've talked myself into it. I don't feel like I know Dave anymore. I used to know Dave, or at least the Dave that Dave would show us, right? Like, I don't feel like I know Dave anymore. I don't feel like the comedy is just, he's such a genius in terms of the way he views the world and looks at different things. I don't feel like the comedy now helps me get to know Chappelle, like, as much as I used to. And maybe that's by design. Maybe we got to know him a little bit too well. You know, he had to go away for a little while.
Yeah, that's very true.
You know, so maybe it's by design. I don't know. But I watched this and it was kind of like filler. It wasn't that big of a deal, you know?
I was excited to know he had another special coming out. I forgot until I knew we were going to talk about it. And I don't know. Again, I'm looking for anything.
You're looking for anything.
I was entertained.
I get it.
And that was nice to be entertained.
That's still my number one guy of all time. But
yeah,
it's just, you know, come back to us, Dave. Anyway.
This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit anytimefitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details. This episode is brought to you by NetSuite by Oracle. The less your business spends, the more margin of money you have. I think that's pretty obvious for everyone, but actually doing it, that's easier said than done because the cost of everything is going up these days. So do the smart thing. Switch to NetSuite by Oracle. It's the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth so you can easily reduce costs and headaches. NetSuite specifically helps by reducing IT costs since it lives in the cloud with no hardware required and cutting the costs of maintaining multiple systems since everything you need is on one suite. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. See for yourself how effective NetSuite can be and try it out today. And by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/ringer. That is netsuite.com/ringer.
Trump got $7.8 million in foreign payments during his presidency. Now, you guys, I know you didn't think we weren't going to talk about it. This is the sub-headline. The bigger headline was the Epstein list came out. The Epstein list came out.
But not the whole list.
Epi. The Epstein list came out. No.
Cocktail was feeling that song a little bit.
You like that shit.
I kind of like that one.
Yeah. When you say not the whole list, they have a couple of names redacted, or are there more names to come out later on?
I think there are more names to come. Donnie, isn't that right? Like there's.
Yeah, I think so. And yeah. The way that it goes, it's looking like these are lists that are just named within the documents. These people aren't necessarily accused of things.
Okay. Well, right. See, that's what this whole thing is fucked up, Donnie, that you put together, because some of them are and some of them aren't. All right. Because you're playing yourself once again. I read the document, motherfucker.
And some of them are what? That song. Some of them are what?
I don't give a fuck what y'all say. That song is hard. Like that song, but that Jaden Alexis, hello, motherfucker.
I don't know it.
Bitch, I'm a Barbie. Bitch, play that shit.
I've never
lips,
heard it.
Hips. Okay. Hello, motherfucker. That song is hard.
Who is it?
It's Jaden Alexis. It's
who's that?
Blueface's girlfriend.
Move music, move music. I'm a bad little bitch and I'm slipped like a Barbie. Hips, lips, ass in a car, you're a scared motherfucker. Hello, motherfucker.
That song is hard. I don't give a fuck. You know you like it.
No, I mean, it's okay.
Yeah, it's fine. You like that shit.
I'm shocked you know it. I thought you were sick of them.
Nah, I'm sick of... So here's the thing. I'm sick of Blueface and Krishan, for sure. When that song dropped, I was ready to hate on that bitch. And it was like, maybe like 15 seconds into this bitch, I was like, man, this shit sucks. What? Okay, talk your shit, girl. all right, Epstein list. Of course, you guys know Jeffrey Epstein ran an intricate and disgusting child sex ring for years, committed suicide in jail some time ago. He had an intricate web of high-profile people that used his services, used his jet, that ranged from royalty to captains of industry to political players and to attorneys. There was a list, and this list is connected to a lawsuit that was filed some years ago that had all kinds of known associates of Jeffrey Epstein that was in the lawsuit. Now, at first, these names were made unavailable to people. Then later on, it was ruled, why would we protect them? If their names are if they're connected to Jeffrey Epstein, put them in the fucking thing. Now, interesting here. It's the only time you'll ever hear me do this. What we're looking at right now is some of the high-profile names in the court documents include former U.S. presidents Bill Clinton and Donald Trump. I have to be fair here. The way Donald Trump's name comes up in this particular filing is that Donald Trump is asked about, and a witness is asked about Donald Trump. Have you ever met Donald Trump? The witness says no. Have you ever heard that Donald Trump has come to the island? The witness says no. So when people are saying that Donald Trump is named in this, the way that they are saying that he is named, from what I read and from the reports that I read, is that he's named because they were asked about Donald Trump and the witness said no. President Clinton, it's just being fair, you guys, is a different story. Here are some of the highlights from names on the list that you guys might care about. You guys might care about Prince Andrew, who's had a long-standing relationship with Jeffrey Epstein. Josanna Joberg is one of the many women who have accused Epstein of sexual abuse. She said that Andrew put his hand on her breast in Epstein's Manhattan townhouse in 2001. This is while he was taking a photo with her and another woman. She says that Ghislaine Maxwell, who was Epstein's right-hand arm, his silly rabbit, and Epstein were present while this photo was being taken. This incident is reported by other people. Prince Andrew has denied it, blah, blah, blah. I don't know if you guys care about Prince Andrew. Boom. She says that she was also turned into a massage therapist and was sexually coerced while she worked with Maxwell and Epstein from 2001 to 2006. She accused Prince Andrew of sexually abusing her two decades ago, when she was 17. He called this baseless, and the case was settled in 2022. Alan Dershowitz, who you guys might know, was accused by Jane Doe number 3 and said that Jeffrey Epstein required her to have sexual relations with Dershowitz on multiple occasions when she was a minor. She said that Dershowitz also played a significant role in negotiating an agreement that provided immunity from federal prosecution in the Southern District of Florida, not only for Epstein, but for any other potential co-conspirators of Epstein, the document says. Okay. Epstein's housekeeper, testified that Dershowitz would often visit Epstein's Florida mansion to get massages. Another one of Epstein's household employers said that the lawyer would be present at Epstein's residence without his family and in the presence of girls. Fox News did an interview with Epstein with Dershowitz. He denied ever meeting the Jane Doe number three. He suggested he was the victim of the Me Too movement's hypocrisy and accused radical feminists of trying to take away his legacy. And said that they're not condemning Hamas, but they're condemning him. So David Copperfield, the comedian, the magician. You ever see his stuff?
I never have.
Went to Vegas to see his show. Great show. Apparently, according to these documents, he was seen at one of Epstein's houses. One of the girls said that he was with a girl at dinner who looked like she was of high school age. She also said that she was also asked if she knew girls were getting paid to find other girls, referring to the recruitment of women by Epstein and Maxwell's massage therapist, that maybe Copperfield asked her that. Copperfield asked her if girls were getting paid to recruit other girls as massage therapists. That's what she says about Copperfield. I don't know what that says about him. I know that if you guys look into David Copperfield, he has some other issues that we used to talk about at TMZ back in the day about his own island that he had. Interesting. Bill Clinton was in the documents. The same lady testified that she did not meet Bill Clinton. She testified that Epstein told her that Clinton likes them young, apparently referring to girls. And she said that Clinton and Epstein had a close relationship, but didn't accuse him of any illegalities. Clinton has repeatedly rejected all allegations that he was involved in anything unlawful, and said that he had no interactions with Epstein for several years prior to Epstein's arrest. There was another incident there in the documents where someone was talking about whether or not Bill Clinton had visited the island and flown around with him in a helicopter and all of that stuff. Donald Trump was mentioned by the same woman when saying that she left with Epstein and a few other people on a private plane from Palm Beach, Florida in 2001. When the plane was unable to land in New York due to a storm, they had to land in Atlantic City and went to one of Trump's casinos. She was underage at the time. So she was asked if she was allowed into the casino. I did not know anything about how old you had to be to gamble legally. I just knew I could not get in because of an ID issue. So she and I did not gamble, she answered. So they went to one of Trump's casinos. They was, they also, I must say here, there's another part is where a lady is asked specifically about Donald Trump, about whether or not she had seen Donald Trump at the island, other things about Donald Trump, and the lady says no over and over again. Donald Trump and Jeffrey Epstein were friends. There's video and pictures of them together, okay? It's out there. You can see it. Donald Trump and Bill Clinton were friends. Their pictures, video, it's out there. You can see it. You can make up your own mind about what was going on with that. But anyone out there that wants to say that Bill Clinton or Donald Trump is innocent or guilty about whatever, it's not as clear cut as some of these other cases. But these guys were friends and hanging out with Donald with Jeffrey Epstein. Shit, Donald Trump is in the video with Epstein, like choosing girls. Have you ever seen that video before?
No, I have not.
You've never seen the video? Don, have you ever seen the video where Donald Trump and Epstein are in a video together and Donald Trump is, they're like looking at girls
looking
together?
Looking and pointing, yeah. I've seen
looking and pointing,
like
yeah.
Place so, in the 90s.
Like in the 90s or something like that. And, you know, Donald Trump has said, like, Jeffrey Epstein likes beautiful women like me, and I know that he likes them a little young. Think same thing.
I've heard that, yeah.
Yeah, Stephen Hawking is in there. And Epstein apparently had emailed Ghislaine Maxwell to issue a reward to any friends, family, and acquaintances to come forward and disprove the allegations that Stephen Hawking had participated in an underage orgy. Michael Jackson was said to have been a friend of Epstein's. She said she saw Michael Jackson at Epstein's residence. When she was asked if she gave Michael Jackson a massage, she said no. There are more names to come at the end of the month. Here's the takeaway from this. I won't let everybody know this. Everybody buckle in. Okay?
Okay.
This is bipartisan. Sexual deviancy is not something that the right has. It's not something that the left has. It's not something for the coastal elites. It's not something for the people in the backwaters and rural areas of America. A guy like Jeffrey Epstein is not going to have the Republicans with him, not going to have the Democrats with him. He's going to have everyone with him. This culture of exploitation and abuse and usury of young women, of young men, of young people, it exists everywhere, all over the spectrum. If you try to politicize this one, you will be disappointed. You will be disappointed because you're going to find out Trump hung around the guy. You're going to find out Clinton hung around the guy. You're going to find out this person's there, that person's there. You're going to find out that everyone had proclivities in that if they subscribe to a certain way of living their life. If they look at people as things for their sexual gratification, that's going to trump any kind of political opinion, activism, or stance that they have. And it might just be some of your heroes. This is the most bipartisan thing Washington has ever done or has done in a long time. The most bipartisan thing Washington has done in a long time is killing Jeffrey Epstein.
Yeah, I mean, I agree.
Like, that's the most bipartisan. That's the most, hey, well, you know what?
And rightfully so.
We can't agree to give these motherfuckers health care, but we can agree that we don't want this motherfucker to start talking. Like, that's for sure. Like, we can't agree on climate change, but we know he got to shut up. We can't agree on funding wars. We can't agree on the border. We can't agree on none of that stuff. But what we know is we don't need him to start talking. So we talk about the list all you want. The list is going to be all over the place. The list is going to be a guy like that can get his tentacles into everyone. So there you go. So when more names come out, you're going to look at names and then boom, 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 boom. There you go. I think we're done. You want to podcast more or what?
What else is on the list? Hold on, let me look.
Nothing. You got any more podcasts in your age?
No.
Okay. I don't think you do. All right. Take your think caps off, but do not stop learning. I am Van Lathan Jr.
I'm Rachel Lynn Lindsay. Bye, guys.